great privilege to come and be with you guys. Ron asked me if I'd come, and I remember thinking to myself, why would he want me to come? And I haven't figured it out. So it might be because I'll say things clearly the way I feel. And is that why you asked me to come, Ron? And I'll try not to swear. Are you taping this? Okay. I don't do that often. Only when I'm in a really bad way. Now, Ron and I were actually talking about a scripture that we both found to be very interesting. It starts in Hebrews chapter 10. He said that he had been working this issue with his guys, and I had been doing a meditation on it myself, and I hadn't really worked this with my guys, but it... I really am personally motivated by the lessons I'm going to share with you tonight and tomorrow. So it comes from my heart, and as a result, it'll come with passion and great feeling. Hebrews 9, it tells the quick little tale, or 10, excuse me, it tells a quick little tale about, did I say 10? I meant 12, sorry. Turn over there. 12. Hebrews 12, verse 15. See to it that no one comes short of the grace of God, that no root of bitterness springing up causes trouble, by it many be defiled, that there be no immoral or godless person like Esau, who sold his own birthright for a single meal. For you know that even afterward, when he desired to inherit the blessing, he was rejected, for he found no place for repentance, though he sought for it with tears. This whole concept of Esau selling out, I want to talk to you about that, selling out. A little later on tonight, I want to start the story of the shipwreck. There are times when you feel like selling out. When you're shipwrecked, you feel like bailing out. There are times when things are difficult. And when it happens to you, afterward you think, man, I shouldn't have done that. And you try to correct it. And sometimes you find that certain things are not correctable. You can maybe get a little bit of it back, but it's not like it would have been. And as I was thinking about this, what was the reason why he sold his birthright? He was hungry. It was that simple. And as you guys can tell, this is something I can relate to. I regularly indulge in hunger. And I'm sure you do too, but you don't store as much extra as I do. But it's one of those things where I enjoy this feeding, this grazing, if you will, and there are times when I think to myself, I'm not going to make it unless I have some indulgence. And so you find yourself, like Esau, you trade off. You trade off the blessing that God gave you. And of course, the major blessing that Esau had was his birthright. He was born, firstborn. He was properly placed. And he was entitled. But according to prophecy, he was going to serve his younger brother. And you guys know that whole story, right? I don't have to go into it. It's got a subplot to it of a sneaky woman. There's always a subplot of a sneaky woman. So be careful of sneaky women. Right? Shall I go into it? I mean, really, he was a mama's boy. He went into the hot tub without his... I don't know. His private jet. That won't show up on the tape. It was, there's many subplots to the whole thing. But Esau was a man's man, and periodically men's men, which you guys are, I'm sure. You get this passionate desire for something in particular, and if you don't feed it, you're going to, you know, cut your losses. You're going to make a decision to get it as best you can. And that's what happened with Esau. The net result of it was he had another agony. It said that he sought for it with tears. And if you have a certain agony and you trade it off for another agony, have you guys ever done that? Like you had a crummy car and you thought, man, I got to get rid of this thing. And so you trade it in to another crummy car. And this, just to pick your poison and keep it. And some of you have, you know, had a bad marriage and you traded off your bad marriage for another bad marriage because you took yourself with you. And that's really the issue. And you need to just kind of stay put. In many cases, stay put and be solid and put one foot in front of the other and do like the AA guys say, one day at a time. And you trust the Lord, like Jesus said, one day at a time. Every day has enough trouble of its own. And you get after it, as opposed to doing this management, like Esau did this great management. I wrote in my Bible here a note. It says, natural longings can defile you. Can you believe it? Natural longings can defile you. Be careful of those natural longings. Now turn to Acts 27. As we talk about things that we should not do, like selling out, I'm going to add some things along the way. One of the best ways to learn is to decide what you don't want to do. And I feel like one of the greatest lessons of life comes from a negative point of view. Have you ever found that? It's good to be positive, and I think we are. We're loaded with positive teaching, and we'll get it as we go through our lessons, but there are certain things we shouldn't be doing. Now, Paul launched out on this this journey in Acts 27, which was a shipwreck. And I wrote in the margin of my Bible, God's will, a shipwreck. So as we go into this, I want you to know there are every once in a while, God will set you up for a shipwreck. And it seems unfair if you look at it from that point of view, but clearly this was set up for Paul as a shipwreck. And the natural inclination of people when they're in the midst of a shipwreck is to get out of the shipwreck, right? Who wants to be in a shipwreck? Not me. And so when we go through this, you'll see that there are things you don't want to do. It's a negative thing. And if you knew you were going to head into a trial, you wouldn't go there. It's like Jonah. Jonah didn't want to go, and so he ran the other way. Or the other day I was reading about Jesus. He sent his disciples into the boat to cross to the other side while he went and spent the night in prayer. Well, he was praying, having a great personal quiet time and devotion. And the other guys were out in the middle of the sea, struggling, you know, at the oars, straining at the oars, and the wind was contrary and that whole story. Well, Jesus sent them out there. Do you think he knew that there was going to be this problem? Absolutely. In fact, here's what I think about that story. And since I've got the cutesy little microphone, I'll say it. He fed the 5,000, right? He fed the 5,000, and they were all kind of cluttered together. And just before the 5,000 were there, he had told his disciples, hey, let's go away for a little while by ourselves. But they couldn't go away because all this mob of people came, and so their quiet time was interrupted. And so he had this whole busyness of the 5,000, which is actually more than 5,000. And then finally at the end of it, he said, fellas, this is my version, okay? He said, "Fellas, I know you had a busy day. Why don't you guys take off in the boat? I'll catch up to you later. I'll let the crowd go home." And so he was helping them to have a little reprieve, a little respite, a little, you know, it would be like if Pastor Ron decided to spot the ushers and say, "Hey, why don't you guys go home? I'll usher the people today," because Jesus ushered them out. And I don't know, is that a good example? I think Jesus was being the deacon. He was being an usher. He was being just a worker guy. And he was giving them a favorable experience in the midst of their really busy day. And then they get out in the midst of this windy evening row, and they're fighting for their lives. And this is what I think. If they would have known that the Lord would have sent them out there, they'd be mad. Have you guys ever been mad that the Lord gave you a certain job? He sent you out on a boat that was going to sink or shipwreck. And I'm telling you, if you think about it long enough, you'll decide, "Lord, I do not want to do this." Have you ever had the words escape out of your mouth? "I don't need this." Have you ever said that? Chances are you need this. And the reason why you need it, you don't understand yet. And the reason why it's so difficult when you're in the midst of it is because it doesn't make any sense to you. You don't see any glory in it. You don't see any value to it. You're just thinking, "I should not be here." Now, when the Lord puts you in a... And by the way, how many of you guys have experienced shipwreck? Okay, the rest of you guys haven't lived long enough. Just be patient. It'll come your way. And when it does, there are some things, really important things to remember here about your shipwreck. First of all, verse 27, chapter 27, verse 1. Are you with me in Acts? Acts 27, verse 1. It says, and I'm reading the New American Standard. I don't know what you guys read. Bless you. It says, it was decided that we should set sail for Italy. You see the word "we" there? He kicks into gear a "we." That's Luke. He's writing this. So Luke is going to go along with him on this trip. It says that he was in the custody of a centurion of the Augustan cohort named Julius. Verse 2, embarking on an Adriamidian ship that was about to set sail for the regions along the coast, we put out to sea accompanied by Aristarchus, Macedonian of Thessalonica. Aristarchus was a believer. So Luke and Aristarchus came along with Paul on this trip. Now, they were his friends, okay? Luke and Aristarchus were Paul's friends. If you're about to go on a shipwreck, God is going to send friends to go with you on the shipwreck. Don't forget that. You will have friends because misery loves company. And if you're going to have misery, you hate to be there by yourself. And I believe this, you don't have to be there by yourself because God is faithful. He'll send along friends who you can commiserate with and you can pray together with, or you can, you know, after you meet together with a bunch of guys, you can go to your room and say, "Man, that was weird." You know, you can just kind of, you can figure it all out together. So there's one thing to remember. When you're about to have a great trial, God will see to it that you have friends. The next thing is this guy, Julius, verse 3, the next day we put out at Sidon, and Julius treated Paul with consideration. This person in charge decided to befriend Paul or give him consideration. And I think that's another thing to remember. God knows how to give you some consideration from the people who are involved in your shipwreck you're about to have. And they won't be just regular people. They'll be the people in charge. God will have you be like a teacher pet, kind of, you know, nice person, that someone will treat you nice. And you can, I feel, you can count on this. The next time you have your crisis moment or your shipwreck or the, you know, the sellout that you're thinking, I got to get out of here, just remember, you've got friends there and you've got people who have authority who will assist you along this journey. Okay? Then, here's another thing you can look forward to. It says, verse 6, the centurion, he found a ship that was bound for Italy. He put us aboard. And verse 11, it says, the centurion was persuaded by the pilot. Here's another thing you can look forward to. Foolish people will be in charge of your life during this time. The village idiots will come along and make decisions for you, and you have no choice in the matter. You have to go along with it. Okay? It's very important to know this is God's will for you. Now, I don't know about you, when I'm in charge of my life, you guys like to be in charge of your life, like control freak people? That's me, that's you, I'm sure, at certain times. And just for funsies, I think God makes the village idiot in charge of us. Just to see how we're going to do. Now you guys know, Paul's, he was a shining light in the midst of this whole thing. He did his best work under pressure. But at the very beginning, he tried to change matters. We're going to go on this ship. And Paul said, I don't know if we should go on this ship. We're going on the ship. I don't know. The pilot started working. He was another village idiot. You know, there was an argument going on. He lost the argument. Remember that. The next time when you're about to hit a shipwreck or a crisis, God will see to it that you lose the argument. You guys are going to go home and talk to your wives. Does it sound like I was saying your wife is a village idiot? I'm sorry. How many times has your wife been in charge of you and made a decision for you and it's the wrong decision? Okay. I'm not the only guy in the room. And we have to go along with it. We have to go along with it because it's God's desire. It says, here's some discussion about their considerable dangerous voyage. Verse 9, it talks about their dangerous voyage. And verse 12 says, the harbor was not suitable for wintering, and the majority reached a decision to put out from to sea from there. If somehow they could reach Phoenix, a harbor of Crete facing southwest and northwest, and spend the winter there. And when a moderate south wind came up, supposing that they had been gained their purpose, they weighed anchor and began to sail along Crete, close inshore. Now, here's one of the problems of a shipwreck life or a great trial that you have. People have motives that you disagree with philosophically. They could have harbored where they were at. They could have stayed there. Paul was trying to get them to stay there. But they wanted to go to a different place. Verse 12, it was not suitable. Do you know why it was not suitable for the majority? Because there were better taverns in Phoenix, the harbor of Crete. And that's the truth. If you go study this out, the reason why they liked to go to this other place was because it was a party town. And that's where they would rather have their wintering so that they could live it up and party during the time. This wasn't as suitable for them. It was an ungodly motive. And Paul was, he was livid about that. How many of you have been just upset like crazy because people with these strange motives are pushing the majority of the momentum. So here he was. Okay, here we go. And then this nice gentle wind comes up. And by the way, don't you think God is in charge of the wind? You know, I was down in the Gulf Coast this last year and a half. You guys go down there? Disaster relief. We've seen what the wind can do. You know, just one big blow, 30-foot wave comes in, disaster. And I think God's in charge of the wind. And sometimes it looks like a nice, gentle wind, and he's about to blow. In fact, if I was on board and I was praying, I would say, "Dear Lord, calm the winds." And I would think about Jesus Christ saying, "Peace be still." And I would pray, "Lord, calm this whole sea for us now. We're going to die out here." But I think the Lord was in the wind. In fact, as I read through this, he probably blew on the water. That's what I think. That's just because I'm a little crazy. But they misunderstood. That's what people do who are, I call them the village idiots, or the people with authority in your life who are going to take you down a pathway you don't want to go. I think they misunderstand certain signs and they go with it without a clear understanding. But you're going to be the one with a real understanding, and you got to get ready. Now, once the violence of the whole event was going on, verse 18, it says, they began to jettison the cargo. And verse 19, here's one, I like this. On the third day, they threw the ship's tackle overboard with their own hands. Now, you guys know what this means. The ship's tackle was their ability to eat. And with their own hands, they threw away their own ability to eat. You know, what do you guys do the first thing when you walk in the house, besides kick your shoes off? Go to the fridge. That's what I do. I'm checking out to see if there's something interesting there, you know. I came down these stairs, the first thing I did is open the fridge, you know. I open other people's fridges. I go over to visit them and I check their fridge out. With their own hands, they jettisoned the cargo and the ship's tackle. This is no small problem here, because you're watching people who are losing hope. In fact, it says in verse 20, from then on, all hope of our being saved was abandoned. Do you have that in your version? This is part of the trial. And if I can kind of prime you and prep you for your next shipwreck trial, you will go through times when you have no hope. And when you do, you'll be like Esau, thinking, well, what good is the birthright if I'm going to die? You can have it. And you'll make a decision based on no hope. And you're not thinking clearly. So when you're in the midst of that trial, just remember this. I'm not thinking clearly. It's not a clear thinking time for me. In fact, I should tell you a personal shipwreck that I had. One of my kids, I have three kids. My oldest is 28, my youngest is 24. And my middle son, who would be 26 right now, he died when he was 15. Actually, he'd be 27 right now. That's right, his birthday was in February. He died as a result of cancer. He had cancer for 2 years. When he was 13, he contracted cancer. We had no idea. He was, as he was growing up, he was a strong, built kind of a kid. He was a very healthy kind of a kid. On those growth charts, he was always in the upper 5%. He hit puberty at, you know, 5.5 or 6. I don't know what it was. He had BO when he was 7, you know, or something. I remember getting close to him. I said, "Hey, pal, take a shower." you know. And then I remember the day I said, "Do you have pubes?" And he says, "What's that?" And I tell him, "It's these little hairs that are grown down by your privates." And he said, "I do." I said, "Let me see him." He said, "Dad." He was just the most growing young man, strong. He was 2 years younger almost than his older brother. He could always beat his brother up, his older brother. He was always stronger and more healthy. My oldest now, he hit his puberty, man, and he scares me. I won't touch him. In fact, he comes and hugs me sometimes, and I start talking in tongues. "Dear God, please save me." Because he's so strong, he's just a brute. But my son grew some cancer. And when it started growing, we couldn't stop that cancer for nothing. It was Hodgkin's lymphoma, which if you know anything about that, it's one of the most treatable of cancers. And when we first got involved in it, we thought, okay, we're going to get this thing. We're going to go to battle and win. And he ended up being what's called multi-drug resistant. We tried 23 or 4 different chemo drugs on him. We tried every different kind of protocol, every different kind of you know, therapy on him. It did not work. We did a bone marrow transplant. You guys know what that is? It's when they intentionally kill you and bring you back to life with new stem cells, new life. Didn't work. Didn't work. Didn't work. And we lost. It was really, for me, major, major shipwreck. I've had, you know, I'm like you. I've struggled with marriage. I'm married 30 years, working on 31. We're going to make it. I've struggled with finances. I've struggled with family members. I've struggled with work. And in my case, it's church. And I've struggled with Christians. But when your child is dying, it's wrong. And I remember, this is what I said. I said, "God, I don't need this." And then I remember, I was talking to the Lord. I was having a little party. You have those pity parties. And I said, "Lord, I got a lot of work to do for you." And it would be better if I didn't have to carry this burden. You know, why me? And I remember the Lord said to me as clear as a bell, I hope this doesn't hurt your feelings, hurt mine. He said, "Why not you?" You're going to get in the midst of struggle, trial, shipwreck, and you're going to think, "This isn't good for me. This is maybe good for someone else." And the Lord will, only God can do it too. I mean, if anybody else would have said to me, "Why not you, Pastor?" I'd have killed him right there. I'd have just blown off the handle, and I would have said wrong things and come after him. But God, he can say things like that to you that level you. But at the same time, you're thinking, okay, if you said that, then you're going to get me through this. And there's going to be some glory somewhere. I remember I was telling Wayne, my brother, my pastor, Wayne Taylor, you may know him. I said, "Wayne, I think Jody's going to die." And he said, "How do you know?" I said, "I just think so." He said, "Well, did God tell you that? Or are you just afraid?" Do you guys have pastors like that? bless their hearts. They just want to get to the bottom line, you know. And I said, well, I know I'm afraid. Guaranteed, I'm afraid. But I think the Lord told me that so I can get my wife up to speed. By the way, if you're going to have a serious shipwreck, remember, those of you guys that are married, your wife is going to get shipwrecked too. Please prepare her for this wild ride she's going to go on. And your kids as well, if you have children. And for me, I had to prepare the church because ours is the business of trusting God and praying for intervention, and maybe some answered prayers would be nice once in a while. A few of those would be great. We do believe God in His miraculous ability. But every once in a while, we're going to have one where God says no. And everybody's going to look and say, well, what happened to your God? And you'll have to do some preparation for it. And I remember feeling the weight of responsibility for that. And I said, Wayne, I think it's going to happen. He said, well, you better get ready. Start preparing. And this was maybe, 8, 10 months before he died. And I remember my prayers started changing. My desire for God's intervention started changing. It wasn't that I didn't want him healed. I did. But he had kind of gone past this point of healing. There was incredible amount of suffering and it's really, shipwreck is not fun. And so I decided I was going to pray, dear Lord, show me your glory in the midst of my trouble. And God did. He started showing me glory in the midst of this trouble. And I honestly, I can tell you, it's been 12 years now since that time, and I have less emotions daily. I still have them. But I can now see the glory really fast and really clear. Really fast and really clear. Back then, I couldn't. All I saw was evil. And if I would have made decisions about my life back then, I would have made the wrong ones. Did you guys ever read Psalm 73? Look at Psalm 73. It talks about the wicked and how they prosper. And the psalmist said, everything they do is wonderful. Their eyes bulge from fatness, and surely I've kept myself pure and vain. And he has this argument with himself. You remember that psalm? Many sermons. I've heard 20 sermons on this one. But the punchline, to me, the one that really is the most important one, is verse 15. It says, if I had said, I will speak thus, behold, I would have betrayed the generation of thy children. Later on he says, when I went to the household of God, I pondered therein, and I understood. But when you're in the midst of a great trial, if you open your mouth and let stuff come out, you could betray the next generation. Because you'll say something it's conclusionary language that's based on thinking that is immersed completely in shipwreck or great trial, and you're not thinking down the road, you're thinking right there that very moment, you're thinking, this is evil, I got to get out of here. When in fact, God wants you to stay there. He wants you to, let me give you a little anecdote thought. After my son died, our family is a camping family. How many of you guys go camping? We have camped so many times in so many different places, my kids can't even remember all the places we've been. It's one of those kind of things. And we've worn out 3 trailers, and we've just traveled all over the place, and we've spent all this amount of time you know, with each other intensely in a little box. By the way, here's something for free. If you have a great tragedy with your family like I did, the first thing I did was we had our memorial service. Then I grabbed my children, my remaining two children, my wife, and we jumped in the Suburban and we went to Disneyland. The happiest place on earth, right? And I, people, you know, when I was going through tragedy, you know what people did? They gave me cards with money in it. And so I went to the happiest place on earth and spent money that somebody else gave me. So that's for free. Then next time you have a great trial in your life and you're thinking, oh, you know, I need to be responsible, don't do it. Do something completely irresponsible afterwards. And if you can, get your whole family in a box and stay in there for 3 weeks. Actually, we went to Disneyland, but then I drove around and around and around, and we went to the Grand Canyon, and we went to, you know, all the canyons down in Arizona, and we just didn't go home until I felt like it. Anyway, what was I saying? Illustration, camping. Our first vacation, besides the after the memorial one, because my other two kids, they were on their best behavior. But the following summer, we went on vacation. And my two kids, they were just like this, fighting. And you know what I found out? My oldest, my youngest didn't like each other. And they liked my middle child. They both liked him. And they didn't really like each other. And this is another thing I found out. My middle child, he kept the peace. And when they were fighting, he would go and pound on his brother or sister, whoever was. He would make a judgment who was wrong and just pound on them. And I never knew it. It was going on behind closed doors, and it was great. In fact, when I found out about it, I told him I was going to pound him. I said, no, I'm going to do what Jody used to do. Anyway, I remember we were having just this terrible vacation. We were up at Cultus Lake in British Columbia, and this is a glorious place. Couldn't have been a better environment. The kids were fighting. I hated it. I was grieving. And I went to bed one night. I told Jeanette, I was laying next to her, and I said, Jeanette, I'm going home tomorrow. And she said, you what? I said, I'm going home. I hate this vacation. I hate this family. I'm going home. And she said, you can't do that. This is our vacation. I said, who cares? This is a crummy family. Prove to me I'm wrong. And you know what she said? She said, it's the only family you've got. And you've got to help these kids get along together. And I said, I can't stand these kids. And she said, they really need you. Okay, are you with me? When you're in the midst of a shipwreck, when you're in the midst of some kind of great trial in your life, you do not want to be there. You don't need this. Why me? Let's change things. Let's manage it. I'm a type A. I'm a double A. You know, or maybe a triple A. And I like to just manage things. And this one, it was forbidden that I would manage my way out of this. I had to stay put and just ride the wave and see what happened. And I'd like to tell you everything is groovy, but I can only tell you this. If I would have spoken thus, I would have betrayed the next generation. If I would have made my conclusions and followed them at that time, it would have been worse than it is now. And it's not perfect now. Even now, it's not perfect. In fact, I'll give you here's a little hint into my life. How many of you guys are routine guys? You like your routines, same things over and over. We were like that. In fact, we would have dinner together every night as a family. Now, I can count on one finger, certainly no more than one hand, the amount of times that I have dinner with my wife every month at home at the kitchen table. 12 years out. And it comes from your life is just thrown up into the air. You just, everything's different. You lose your routines. And then pretty soon you have other routines that aren't very healthy. Like, I'll take care of myself. And my wife will say, let's have some dinner. Oh, I'm full. I already ate. And let me take you out for dinner. And I take her out and I'll sit with her and drink coffee. But I've already eaten. See how weird it gets? And you lose your passion for the things that when you were carefree. See, when you don't have cares, you're carefree. Everything is really kind of easy. We could replace the word with carefree with careless. So sometimes in your life, when you find yourself, you're kind of in a crossroads where you could go really strong, keeping your life going with the Lord, or maybe you could chuck it all because you don't like what's going on and I'm ready to make a change. So you have to be careful about that. And it happens in this shipwreck kind of environment. Now, let's get some encouragement. I've got 10 minutes, right? Here's some encouragement. Acts 27. When you're in the midst of shipwreck, all these things are kind of going wrong. They're going right, but they're going wrong. It's a mixture. Look at verse 22. Paul rises up. He's a stud. And he says, hey, fellas, keep up your courage. Hey, fellas, keep up your courage. First of all, you have to learn to do that to yourself. Tell yourself, keep up your courage. You guys read the Psalms? David was a guy who was constantly preaching to himself. He was constantly depressed. If you read through the Psalms, you'll see a guy who's had, you know, the most... He declared his own feelings more than any guy I've ever known. He was self-declared. He described his emotions. And he poured out his heart, but then he'd set himself down and say, now take courage. That's what he'd do. So, tell yourself, take courage. And then when there's guys around you saying, man, I don't need this, I'm out of here. You gotta say, hey, take courage. Take courage. Don't bail out. And he said, take courage. And then he says, we're not gonna lose our lives. That was a bold statement. They were about to die, all of them. But he said, we're not going to lose our lives. And then he says, verse 24, don't be afraid. Okay, underline these in your Bibles. Make sure that you don't lose this. Take courage. No loss of life. Don't be afraid. And then verse 25, I like this. I believe God. God showed me we're not going to die here. No, I believe God. Make sure that people know that you're looking to a source greater. Your conclusionary thinking, verse 25, therefore, keep up your courage, man. I believe God. Sometimes people believe your belief. They believe your belief. And especially if you have that belief during a time of shipwreck. Here's one of the funniest, most odd things in the world. People love to rubberneck, to look at wrecks. Have you ever noticed that? If there's a wreck, people are going to slow down. Sometimes they drive around the block so they can see it again. Because wrecks are cool. Especially if people are flying out windshields and, you know, there's all kinds of weird... You see it on TV. There's guys playing wrecks over and over again. People want to watch you during your wreck. I don't know what they're looking for. I remember this one sweet gal. She came up to me while Jeanette and I were suffering with the loss of our child. And she said, I just don't know how you guys can make it. And I was thinking, "You stupid woman. What do you want me to quit? What are you saying?" And I just kind of patted her on the head and said, "I don't know either, honey. The Lord's with us." And I walked away thinking, man, the world's full of weirdos. And they all go to my church. I believe God. I remember this fella said the same thing to me. And I said, what do you want me to do? Let's go get drunk. You know, my kid died. Let's go get drunk. Now, who would blame me if I did that? If anybody did blame me, I'd hit him in the nose. But that's not the point of suffering. The point of suffering is getting a hold of some strength, isn't it? I believe God. God's going to help us. But, verse 26, we got a crash. Now, some further things came up with this. The men wanted to jump ship, verse 30. The sailors were trying to escape. And Paul said to the centurion, verse 31, "Unless these men remain in the ship, you yourselves will not be saved." And so he persuaded the leader to cut away the boat. Verse 32. Can't jump ship. Can't jump ship. Here's besides selling out your birthright, we can say this. You can't jump ship. The next time you're on a ship that's guaranteed going to sink, you can't jump that ship. You have to stay on it. Now, what are some things that, heartaches in your life that would make you want to jump ship? Besides, you know, the death of a child or a bad marriage. What else would make you want to jump ship and just get away? How about a bad church? Or a bad pastor? Or a bad job? Or a crummy little town? I want to live in a bigger town. Or a bad economy, or too many liberals. I want to go where the conservatives are. And, you know, you have all these reasons why you want to jump ship. You know, I was in California once, stayed there for a little time where Terry lives. Who'd want to live in California? Ick! But you know what? If God wants you to live in California, you go live in California. Or, you know, you can't leave. You can't jump ship when the Lord tells you to do something. Hang tight. And then, this is the one that I love the most. When you're in the midst of a shipwreck, verse 34, Paul said, "Let's eat." That's my favorite thing right there. I don't know. Some people, when they get depressed, they don't eat. I got 12 years of... You know, what do you do when you're depressed? And whatever it is you do, it needs to, this environment, look at this environment. Verse 35, it says, they took bread, they gave thanks. They broke it together, which is fellowship, symbolic of communion and unity. And they were all together and they decided, let's have courage together. We're going to do this together. And then it says, verse 36, they were all encouraged. And then verse 37, there was 276 people and everything was groovy until you get to verse 42 and the soldiers decided, let's kill all the prisoners. There's always going to be a problem. There's always going to be a problem. And at that point, you have to trust those village idiots to come along, the ones with authority, to say, nope, that's not going to happen. We made it this far. We're going to continue on. And, hey, we're in this trial together. Isn't it something? They were all brought safely to land. Tomorrow morning, we're going to, carry on with this. And I want you guys, for your breakout groups, as best as you can, I don't think you need to be so honest that you endanger yourself in carrying on with your trial, but as best as you can, share your shipwreck with each other. It could be that we have friends here that are going to go through a shipwreck together. You know, like Luke and Aristarchus. You may find friends here that'll help you go through this shipwreck together. Okay? So Lord, help us. Lord, help us with our breakout time. Lord, help us with our sharing time. Lord, help us to be transparent with one another. Dear Lord, help us to be encouraged, even as we see things we don't want to do. More tomorrow, you guys.